formed the heart like a pyramid? Who made the sides wide? Who formed the caverns of the lungs? Who made the honor? Able parts of the body conspicuous, and concealed the others. See how much skill is bestowed in one species of matter, how much labor on one single work, everywhere there is beauty. Everywhere perfection, everywhere variety. Who made all these things? Who is the mother, who is the father, if it be not the only and invisible God, who has created all things by his will? Alcibiades, the Greek patrician who nursed within his breast senatorial aspirations, submitted to an inventory of his mental and ethical qualifications at the hands of Socrates, who there upon demonstrated that the sole asset of the youth consisted of a vague proficiency in strumming the lyre, the ability to recite poetry not too badly, and an indifferent prowess in the gymnasium. Holding up the mirror of rationality before Alcibiades, Socrates convinced the would-be guardian of the sovereignty of Athens that he lacked sufficient intelligence to administer his own affairs, let alone those of the Athenian commonwealth. Times have changed since those golden days when skeptic and peripatetic roamed the Athenian byways. But the spirit of Alcibiades still lives. What matters it if his lyre has now become the saxophone, his quoit and javelin the ball and bat, and his poetic fancies chiefly concerned with caroling the virtues of his alma mater? The 20th century. Alcibiades still goes forth full of purpose but woefully empty of knowledge, and for lack of a Socrates may actually become a senator and tax the resources of Providence to preserve the integrity of the commonwealth. The universalization of educational opportunity is the exalted purpose of today. The body politic enthusiastically supports every issue which encourages and facilitates the promulgation of learning. Impressive institutions for the instruction of the young are the civic pride of every community. And like the cathedrals of medieval Europe shadow the teeming city spread out around them. We have deified education and built temples to the spirit of wisdom even as antiquity gilded exoteric and de-esoteric knowledge. 333. 334 L. Lectures Onancien T.P. Helosophy. Shrines for the gods of yore. Nevertheless, to us education is still but a word, a wonderful word, truly implying all that is noble, all that is beautiful, all that is true. Yet how far does the practice fall short of the premise, how vast the interval between the implication and the fact? The education for which men have even given their lives and which they have preserved at fearful cost through the world's dark ages, the education which the seekers of every age have sought with whole-souled longing, the education that was the very bounty of the gods and the evidence of their perfect covenant with men, this education has failed from the earth. Knowledge has retired again into that Stygian darkness from which the first philosophers called it forth by strange rite and sacrificial deed. We live in a day of material enlightenment, but profound indeed is our ethical and philosophic benightedness. There is a supreme educator, an all-knowing preceptor, an all-wise counselor, an all-sufficient guide, whose integrity dwarfs that of any mortal man. Deep in the inner recesses of our own souls, but obscured by the hallucinations of the senses, is Mercury's inexhaustible pitcher and infinite capacity, which, though ever flowing, is ever full. Man's only educator is this inner self, which alone is capable of sifting fact from fancy. The drawing forth of this inner knowledge and its establishment as the ever-sufficient and comprehending director of the outer life is the true office of education. Educo, then, signifies to draw forth, and education is that mental process of the outer mind by which is evoked as though by magic The mighty genius that, like a sleeping giant, is man's unsus. Pected strength. Truth, then, comes from within, fancies. From without, and never will education fully solve the prob. Lems that are its peculiar province until it equips unfolding. Manhood and womanhood with the keys by which this treasure. House of inner potentialities may be unlocked. As through a glass darkly can even now be glimpsed that tomorrow of education when, grasping with fuller realization the purpose of its own existence, the school assumes the fullness of its role. By becoming the dispenser of those disciplines by which man may release the greater thinker within. How removed from the frenzied searcher after temporal knowledge is the calm and certain master of the hidden path. The philosopher does not gaze at the stars through man-made telescopes alone, but by the transcendency of his internal faculties he is lifted up and taken into the very soul of the star itself. He feels its life throbbing through him, and from his place within its very heart he learns its innermost secrets. Mingling through his inner self with the inner selves of all things, the truly educated one thus exchanges vain fancy and speculation for the perfect understanding. The soul in him communes with the soul in his world, and both share in a common felicity. He sees, he senses, and he feels, thus coming into possession of countless esoteric secrets which, though his very own, he cannot impart to others nor even explain to that inferior self which is in bondage to the sphere of ignorance. Exoteric and esoteric KNOW Ledge 535. A study in angles and curves. In symbolism the straight line is considered masculine and significant after an SGTH. The curved line feminine and significant of beauty. In the Kabbalah the tuplers I. Strength and beauty, support the arch of the universal house. In the above face. The male and female elements are combined, and thus cosmos, the divine androgyne, comes into being. Chapter 15. Symbolism, the universal L language. A symbol is a form designed to portray some abstract quality. A symbol must convey an impression, it must cause the mind to see something which, though not actually in the symbol itself, is suggested by the symbol. Through the familiar is thus shadowed forth the unfamiliar, through the commonplace that which is not commonplace is made evident. Symbols are forms, but the principles for which they stand so transcend the boundaries of form that they can only be sensed by reading into the symbol certain abstract elements, or by grasping with internal comprehension that greater profundity which the symbol does not contain but whose existence it intimates. Symbols are also employed to epitomize a whole universe may be summarized in a single star, and vast issues by being reduced to their simple elements may be rendered intelligible. By clothing the unfamiliar in terms of the familiar, the mind is enabled to grasp with a certain measure of accuracy the significance of the unknown. We must re-emphasize the point stressed in our opening chapter, namely, that as symbols increase in complexity they decrease in power. Thus the simple figures set forth immensity, ties, the compound figures parvitudes. Increasing definition causes qualities to verge toward form, hence the more intricate the figure the more it is concerned with particulars and the narrower becomes the scope of its symbolism. One of the true purposes of symbols is to preserve ideas in an indefinite state, so that their lucidity shall not be obscured by unnecessary form involvement. Between symbolism and caricature there is a slight fundamental difference, as a personality may often be 337. 338 lectures on philosophy. Most truthfully depicted by the exaggeration of certain characteristics, so symbols may convey an adequate likeness of a quality and still in no appreciable way resemble the quality. In the last analysis, man is not simply a body but rather a bundle of characteristics which confer upon his objective nature a certain temperament or individuality. By deftly accentuating the idiosyncrasies of character with a few heartless lines, the caricaturist exposes the deformities of rationality and thus portrays the man as he really is. The art of caricature follows certain cardinal principles in recognition of the impressions innate in forms and orders. Breadth, for example, is always associated with optimism, length with pessimism. Hence to broaden the head gives the impression of mental sufficiency. Or broad-mindedness, to broaden the body suggests a certain substantiality. To narrow the head causes the impression of intolerance, or narrowness of outlook, to lengthen the body oppresses the mind with a feeling of melancholy. Angles convey the impression of strength, curves of beauty. Harmonious combination of angles and curves invoke concord, inharmonious combinations produce discord. Definite reactions are thus produced by simple lines or combinations of lines. Colors and sounds also possess similar powers of mental and emotional stimulation. Consciously or unconsciously, the shape and arrangement of bodies with which we come in close contact thus profoundly influence our dispositions. Definite mental reactions are caused by contemplation of the symmetrical Pythagorean solids, for all natural bodies contain a force generated by their own organization which leaves its subtle record on the inner sensibilities of man. By accentuating this force according to a definite procedure, certain mental attitudes can be stimulated. And in recognition of this principle, the mysteries recommend that their initiates meditate upon certain emblems or figures prepared with this end in view. In common with the laws of caricature, symbolism secures emphasis by distortion, harmony by conventionalization, and force by simplicity. In great measure, art is the process of elimination. Symbolism reveals